He knew I was a fighter, but we didn't tell anybody in jail. They find out you're a boxer in jail, you're going to be fighting everybody because everybody wants challenge to challenge you. The guy that worked with Mike Tyson. Everybody wants to challenge the guy that worked with Lennox Lewis.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Alan Blywise, retired professional boxer and boxing coach at Five Stones Fight Club. Alan, welcome to episode 85 of the American Grown Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, glad you could join me here today, and we get to learn about your career in boxing, you know, some of the people you have sparred with, and just, it's going to be quite the journey.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time. Look forward to talking with you.
To start off, first, we got to shout out Shane Manny.
Absolutely.
Owner of Five Stones Fight Club, Marine, you know, just an amazing guy, salt of the earth kind of guy. He kind of put us in touch, and I think more or less we found each other on social media.
Yep, absolutely. It was funny because I think we had contacted, I had contacted you right about the same time, and I had no clue that Shane was coming to see you.
Yeah. It's just funny how that works out, like such a small world. And for the listeners, you know, you were a professional sparring partner for over 10 heavyweight boxing world champions. You have a testimony that you could make a movie about, right? And now you battle probable CTE. And one of the things I thought was really neat, but you wrote a poem, and I don't know if you'd like to read it, but I'd be interested if you'd read it to kind of start this off. Let me just find this here. The pray the Lord my soul to keep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of funny. When I wrote those, I was in a pretty dark time, battling with CTE, just diagnosed with Parkinson's. Went through a major neck surgery, complete Jacob's ladder in my neck from C6 to C2.
Wow.
My neck collapsed. So I have a box in the front, and then I've got a huge scar going up from the center of my back all the way up to my neck. So those were pretty dark times. And when you'll hear me refer to BC, you know, just like the Bible before Christ, but when I was at that time of my life, I was in a dark place. Like, I go back and read some of those now and just realize how much of a monster I was. You know, so it's not hard to go back and read them. I used to carry it with me on my phone. If you like me to read it and you want to just turn around the screen, I'd be more than glad to read it.
Yeah.
And I was writing, just, you know, didn't realize. You know, I thought it was negative, but there's so many people out there that suffer with CTE and frontal temporal dementia that, you know, it was my way to reach that community. And, you know, I documented over 100 poems I wrote in 100 days. It was a contest.
Okay.
Of course, I fell out in day like 49 because I forgot for a few days to write. So
yeah.
It was a timed and logged in thing. So. But I ended up writing 100 poems anyway just to help that community out because there's really not a lot of awareness out there. So
yeah, I mean, it struck me because I remember you sent the link, and the app for the listeners is Medium.
Yeah.
Right? They can go to Medium. They can look you up. Alan Blywise, type that in the search bar, and you can read these poems. I mean, yeah.
Sure. The poem was Pray My Lord My Soul to Keep. As I lay my head down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. But then my mind goes deep, it's my soul that is so meek. They say our minds are being taken over by our disease, but I'm trapped on this trapeze. What is the fake and what is the disease? Have the images and tests that say the plaque is eating away, but yet I'm stuck in this haunted play. To read and see what you all talk about your loved ones, I lived all with your words, but still have suffered the other end of the guns. Trapped between the two sides is the scariest thing, where it is in my imagination I hear the ring. Not sure some days if I really understand the other feelings, like I still am the man. But the thing that battles us both sides of this disease is the loss of what it'll be on both sides. I don't know what side to kill.
Yeah. Like, so when I read that, you know, pray the Lord my soul to keep, that is a prayer that my father and I would say every night as a kid, you know. And even now, to this day, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. When I read that, I was like, wow, not knowing you, this is the first time we met in person, like, you've been through some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And for the listeners, you know, we're going to dive into it, but I want to share that poem because I thought it was very well put together. To start it off, where are you born and raised? Where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C. I was adopted at birth, stayed in the hospital for 6 months before I was adopted. I was adopted to a pretty evil mother. She was, from day one in the crib, she would come in when, after my father would put me to sleep, anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, it was like clockwork. She'd come in, just start hitting me in the head, whispering on my ear that she's not my mother, she'll never be my mother, she hates me. That went on until I was about 7 years old. Then her mother, she was a school teacher. My dad wasn't there a lot because he worked for U.S. Customs in D.C.
Okay.
So back then in the 60s, you had to work in the District of Columbia. Only white kid. Was getting bullied at home. My grandmother was doing, you know, more physical, assaulting me. She would pluck my testicles till I couldn't breathe or I'd pass out crying. She did that for quite a few years. Later on, to where I actually had to have a testicle removed. They thought I had a tumor on it. This was about 8 years ago, maybe less. After the surgery, they said it wasn't cancerous. It wasn't a tumor. It was scar tissue. So I told the doctor what had happened at early on in birth, and he said 100% that's what it was.
No shit.
So, yeah. So I was getting abused there and then being bullied at school, of course, being the only white kid.
Yeah.
So I learned how to sneak out of school about 15 minutes before the kids got out, because it's true, the white kid is not as fast as that black kid, because I could never, ever outrun. So they would just know. Like, it was just their fun time. So eventually, when I was 9 years old, I ended up getting jumped into the Bloods, and I was probably, well, not only the only white guy, the only white Jewish kid, I was adopted into a Jewish family at that time, and here I'm running around doing things in the neighborhood and the projects. I'm running, getting dime caps from people to come up and get a dime, you know, $10 worth of crack, $20 worth of crack. I could serve them because police kept me. It's a slap on the wrist. You're 9 years old. They can't do anything with you. So I started getting love from a family that was showing me love. Now, I took an ass whooping to get into this, you know, to get in. When they say you get jumped in, yeah, you get jumped in. Try to get jumped in as a white guy. They're definitely going to try to change your color as well. So I took a pretty bad beating, but then I was accepted. Never have I been accepted by anything in my life. Now, my father protected me as much as he could. But again, I found this out later in life. He knew what was going on because he was being abused. I never saw my parents hold hands.
Yeah.
Never saw him sit on the same sofa. Never saw him in the same bedroom. And it was all because back then she had a biological sister, an older sister of mine. My father wanted another kid and she had a couple miscarriages. And I'm sure that got her angry and took out on me. But my father finally convinced her to adopt a son, and
yeah,
she got a son. She got a pretty wild child. What happened to me with the trauma? You know, first being adopted, you're being abandoned from your birth mother, then being abandoned again from the one that's supposed to be your mother, and then being abused even more by the one that's your grandmother. I was never allowed to talk. Like, never was I allowed to talk about being adopted. Never.
Never.
Couldn't tell anybody. People would make comments, oh, Alan looks so different. He's so tall. You're so short. Yeah. Oh, you know, he drinks a lot of milk and stuff. But I'm thinking back now, it was she was scared to let me get inside with anybody because she was scared of what she knew she was doing.
Yeah. How do you think that affected you? You know, I know you were young back then, so some of you might not remember. How do you think that affected you as you matured and grew up?
Well, that was part of the problem. I never did mature. I didn't get out of school. It was eighth grade. I started ninth grade and got expelled out of ninth grade for knocking out a teacher.
Okay, wait. What? Why? What happened? What did you say?
Ninth grade. I just came out of, so my seventh and eighth grade year, I was in boys' forestry camp up in the mountains I put a knife to my mother's neck for a 16-hour police standoff. And I went from being bar mitzvahed to holding a knife over her neck like a few weeks later. It was all because of what I got. I had to study. I did this. I went through this tutoring with this rabbi. I made a boatload of money, and she wouldn't let me have none of it. So I wanted to put her in the fear that she put me in for all those years.
All those years, yeah, suffering and pain.
So I ended up going away for a 30-day evaluation to Maryland Training School for Boys. And then after that, went to court. Mother said she didn't want me back. She's not ready for me. She feared me. So they sent me up to the Maryland Forestry Camps for Boys up in Western Maryland. So I was up there, supposed to get a GED. Never did that. So my father wiggled away to get me back in the school system. So when I came out of that camp 2 years later, I was there for 2 years.
Wow.
From the time I was 13 to 15. So then I was getting ready to start high school. So I had played soccer then. I was a pretty good soccer player. So that was how my dad finagled the school and that wasn't in my neighborhood to let me come in and
give you a shot
and work. Take you so back. Soccer coach said he was going to take me under the wing. They put me in the ROTC program. And one day I'm dressed in my ROTC uniform, and Shane and Joel's going to hear this for the first time, but I'm dressed in my ROTC uniform, and this is how I met a 40-year friend, Danny. You know, back then, the things that the bullies did were the freshmen come in. We had binders, so you had this big stack of binders. We didn't have book packs back then. Okay. We carried our binders.
Dang, yeah.
So we're carrying the binders, and your older class guys would knock them out of the freshman series. Well, so you got to pick them up. Yeah. So this kid, Mark Carpenter, comes by. He was a senior football player, redheaded freckled kid. I still remember it to this day. Knocks my books out of my hand. I turned around and said something pretty bad, I'm sure, just to provoke him to come to me. And he did, and I started fighting him. Well, as I'm fighting him, I got him down. I'm starting to pummel this kid, and I feel somebody grab me from behind. So I'm thinking it's one of his friends.
Yeah,
I just turn around and swing, and it's the history teacher, Mr. Wright, from Athelton High School in the 80s that went down. And then I remember I was in the principal's office. He comes in, swolled up eye, just so mad, wanted to kill me. It was like, you know, I've been here for 30 years. Nothing like this has ever happened. So they suspended me to the Board of Education. So Noel Farmer was his name. He was the head of Board of Education for Harrah County. He tells my dad I need tough love. He's like, I'm going to have him come in here. I'm going to rough him up a little bit. I'm going to scare him. And my dad said, I wouldn't really advise you of doing that. I've been to counselors. Like, I've fought my way out of psychologist's office my whole life. So he was like, no, I'm good with young men like this. So I remember sitting down, this big leather seat across his desk. He sits there. He kicks his feet back on the desk. He's like, Blywise, you think you're such a tough ass. Why don't you come across this desk with me? Before he ever got the word me out, I was across the desk beating the shit out of him. And I hear him, yo, Mr. Blywise, Mr. Bly. My dad comes in. And my dad had a way of just saying Alan three times, and it could snap me out of a rage. And he came in. He was like, Alan, Alan, Alan. I snap out of rage. Mr. Farmer says, he is expelled out of every public school that there is. This kid's not fit to be in schools. And my dad just said, I told you so.
Yeah, tried to warn him.
So
right.
No education. I started training at 16 years old. My dad would take me to my original gym, Hillcrest Heights. He would take me to the gym in the morning when he worked. I got to work with the pros. That's when I got to work with Riddick Bowe right out of the Olympics. He bought his mom a house in Fort Washington, Maryland. And Eddie Futch, Rock Newman, Mr. Tuttle used to bring him to our gym, and we would spar him. So you're 16 years old, I'm sparring with the guy getting ready to fight for the heavyweight championship.
That's wild.
That's wild. He's the one that gave me a nickname, Ghost, because he couldn't say Blywise.
Blywise. So it's Ghost, okay.
So I picked up the name Ghost when I was probably 16 years old. I remember him taking me to the gym, so I get to train with the pros. Then I go back with Vardell McCann, my trainer, and we'd stop at Black Eyed Peas. We'd eat, then we'd go home, we'd rest, and then he would teach me footage of boxing. We had that one-on-one time, and it was just such a passion. So then I'm sparring Boone Poltz. Boone Poltz goes away to fight for the Cruiserweight title, wins it, and I was one of his premier sparring partners to get him ready for that title shot. Again, I'm 16. These guys are 19.
Yeah.
So start doing well, but still getting in trouble on the streets, doing things I shouldn't be doing. And I was 17. I had about 112 amateur fights. After my amateur career, being a white Jewish kid, back then, I was supposed to be that Peter McNeely coming up to fight Tyson, because here Tyson just came out. Then I got picked up by Bob Arum, which is a Jewish promoter of Top Rank Boxing. I got picked up and signed by him at 17 years old. Got about $125,000 signing bonuses after taxes. It was like $88,000.
Nice chunk of change.
But 17 years old, now I have $88,000. Then I start going back to D.C. and I start messing with hookers. I start getting escorts. I'm starting to go to parties, getting introduced to coke. You know, going to big go-go things. Going, you know, go-go's and music they listen to in D.C. I remember just going to the go-go concerts at Blobs Park. Just coking up with everybody, partying. So now I'm not training like I should. Here they have my first pro fight set up. It's under the Vince Petway card. Vince Petway's fighting Simon Brown for the world title, which was one of the best knockouts in boxing. I go in, fight this kid, Greg Livener from Pittsburgh. 3-5, I should have had no problem beating him. Small heavyweight.
Yeah.
And I gassed out after the second round. Answered the bell in the second round and got TKO'd in the corner. He just covered up, taking shots, wasn't fighting back, and the refs jumped in and stopped it. 0-1. Okay, no problem. Then I meet my wife. Met her, my son's 32, so I met her 33 years ago.
He's the same age as me. I'm 32 also, yeah.
Okay, that's my wife. So that's how old my son is. So I met my wife when I was up here. One of my friends played pro soccer. He was up here for tryouts. She happened to have her brother there at the stadium. And I met her there. We talked, exchanged numbers. Back then, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have internet. We didn't have any of that. We had home phones.
Okay.
So I started talking to her. Just fell in love with this girl. She was beautiful. She looked like Princess Di.
Wow.
I always thought Princess Di was gorgeous. Yeah. Absolutely.
100%.
The accent I could do away with after I worked with Lennox Lewis, but we'll talk about that later on.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with this girl. She's pregnant with my son. We weren't married. I remember going over the Harrisburg Bridge with her father. Father of five, comes from a Ukrainian Catholic family, and very strict. And that's his baby. She's the oldest of five. Okay. That's his baby.
Yeah. That's his girl, right?
Yeah. So I'm going over the bridge, and I'm like, hey, I got to tell you something. He's like, what? I'm like, Chrissy's pregnant. And I'm sitting there like, And he's like, all right, what's your intentions? And I'm like, I'm going to marry her. So we went ahead and went to Maryland. We got married at a courthouse. Had my son. He was a little over a year old. So he was probably about maybe 14, 15 months. And she was pregnant with, which I didn't know at the time, my daughter. And I was up at Kevin Rooney's with Mike Tyson. So we went to one of Tyson's fights she came out with me.
Yeah.
We went out with Kevin, went out with Mike and the team. And Kevin was getting interviewed by a reporter that was in a wheelchair. The guy asked him, like, you know, what did you do with that last $5 million you made on Tyson's fight? We heard you gambled it away and drank it away. No sooner did he say that, Kevin's throwing his gin and tonic on this reporter.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, Kevin, you're a fucking pig. Right in front of Mike, right in front of everybody. And she walked off to the room. So here I'm like, oh, great. So I'm up there. Terry Ray comes into camp. He was the cruiserweight champ of the world, which still a dear friend of mine. He came up to camp, and he was a pretty blonde hair, blue eye fighter. Good looking kid from Indiana. Here I'm, dark hair, brown eyes, you know, I'm Russian and Italian to find out later on, and Irish. And we started messing around with girls up in camp. So Kevin was away with Mike for a fight. We had some girls over the house, and they stole all Kevin's jewelry when they left. So we're home on Christmas break, and it's Christmas Eve, and I hear the phone ring at 2 a.m. I hear my wife go downstairs in the kitchen because my wife worked late shift, so she got home real late at night. I'd stay home, watch my son. You know, that's how our training shift went. So it was Kevin Rooney. He was drunk and he's sitting there telling Chrissy, like, yeah, I just want to let you know your husband's up here fucking everybody but you. And I just watched her heart go to her stomach. She looked at me and said, is it true? And I said, yeah. Well, tried to make it work. There was no way. I was her first love. She was my first love. And we separated and got, you know, got the, so we separated. She went on her way. I continued. I ended up, because of work with Mike, ended up with Lennox Lewis for 3 years, got to travel all around with him. I had a shorter stature. I wasn't a big heavyweight. I had to frame like, you know, Evander Holyfield, and that's, that was the big money fights then. So through the late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, I was making money to, you know, all these heavyweight champs. I'm in there getting camp time for them. And back then it was over $1,000 to $3,000 a week, $100 a round, your food's paid, you're sitting at top notch hotels, you're traveling.
Living
a rock star life.
Yes, yeah.
But then I'm still just always traveling around like thinking, man, where's this emptiness come from? Like I just felt empty. I really did. Here I'm a deadbeat dad. I had my son, she ended up having my daughter. This is after I never saw my daughter but one time after she was born. Not because of anything of her, it was me, irresponsible, just no care in life. Like, I hurt everyone because I was hurt so young.
Well, yeah, so, you went through so much trauma.
So, never let her know then.
And you didn't let her know?
Just because I was a rough and tough guy. She fell in love with this fighter, and, you know, I'm going to tell her that a 5'1" lady plucked my testicles and another one hit my head.
Do you think you didn't want to show weakness? Is that why?
I think it was not just weakness, scared to hurt her, even though I did.
Yeah.
Even with my kids, like, I was scared I'd hurt them.
Right.
You know, and I realize this stuff now since
looking back. Yeah. Looking
you
back.
Know.
Yeah.
But I just totally... just crushed her heart. So I ended up finding another girl in Boston. She had her doctorates from Fordham. Told her a lot of my problems and everything that happened, most of everything. And she was like, oh, I can fix you. Like, I can fix you. Just listen to me. I'll help you. We'll get you figured out. Well, that lasted a marriage. Had a daughter with her. On Father's Day, when my daughter Maddie was 6 months old, I remember my mother, adopted mom, always continued to try to sabotage everything. Called her on Father's Day. I think I owed my mom like $1,000 from like a year earlier. And she called and let her know that. And then she let her know some things that no one knew other than my family, that she told her things I did, that they paid a lot of money in attorneys, you know, to make sure I didn't go to jail for a long time.
Like back when you were with the Bloods?
With the Bloods, and then a lot of stuff I was doing. When I moved to Columbia and saw all these white yuppie kids that were bullies, I was called the bully beater. I'd go see somebody getting bullied, and I'd just go fuck the bully up in a second. I'd just three-piece them and just laugh at them and walk away. There was a lot of just rage, absolute rage in my life. So where was I? So we were separated. So I had a kid in Boston, and she one day gives me a call. She found a guy. She's going to get married, and this guy would be a great guy, and would I be willing to give up the kids for adoption? Well, I wasn't being a father. I was a deadbeat dad. I didn't want the responsibilities of paying child support, all this. So I'm sure, like, sure. So the other marriage and daughter, so 6 months, my mother calls my ex-wife and she tells her all this stuff about my past. She kicks me to the curb. She tells me, you got to quit boxing. You need to get a real job.
But that's like your everything, right?
That was my only thing. I did. I tried to fill her shoes. She is this great doctorates person, helped me bullshit a resume. And I used to, you know, at times I did floors and stuff to hustle and make money. I'd go strip and wax like a retail store floor, make a few grand, and it's easy. Rent the equipment, get the stripper, get the wax, wax on, wax off.
Yeah, right.
So, and spent a lot of time doing that in juvenile. So I knew how to do floors from juvie.
Yeah.
So I get a job for this company called Coverall Cleaning Concepts. It's the largest cleaning franchise in the world. Still is.
Yeah.
And they're going to give me a job as the regional director of Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, and those the tri-state. So I have an office now. I have assistants. I'm making $78,000 a year plus commissions on all the franchise sales.
Pretty good, yeah.
Good start. Well, I'm on my own trying to do big boy things, and what do I find right away is the Coke. And I find the good stuff in Ohio. So now I'm in there with this big job, sitting there doing about a quarter ounce of Coke a day.
Damn.
A day. Yeah. Lock my door in my office doing Coke. My assistant needed me. She'd buzz me in the old school way. So I ended up starting to embezzle money. I couldn't afford my Coke habit. So I can't even say the word embezzle. I was so stupid. I was just writing checks to Alan Blyweiss, cashing them to support my habit. So 3 months later, $38,000 later, I'm in my office. There's no beeping in. There's pounding on the door. It's the police. The attorneys from their corporate office in Florida of Coverall. And the regional or the national director to train me. I get cuffed up, give everything over, get out on my own recognizance, which I don't know how that happened, but this was an adult life. Most of my stuff was just juvenile. And I ended up getting 6 months for it. Well, again, now, because I'm the cleaning guy, I ended up getting the sheriff's porter job. Well, the sheriff's porter job is coming down, working for Simon Lease, which was the sheriff of Hamilton County at the time. He's also the guy that prosecuted the guy from Penthouse in the wheelchair. Can't think of his name, but the guy that started Penthouse. So he prosecuted him.
Okay.
Larry Flint,
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah.
So he prosecuted him. Now he's the sheriff of Hamilton County, and now I'm his porter. And I can clean. This man loved me. Right away, I get to go outside, sweep things up. So now I went from doing 6 months. Now I'm the pod father because anything people wanted, drugs, cigarettes, they'd have their people drop it off. I'd sweep it up. I'd go right into the sheriff's bathroom, lock the door, because he always said, man, don't use those bathrooms. Use my office. I'm using his ceiling tiles to hide everything because who's going to search the sheriff's office?
Yeah, last place they'd look. Right.
So, and I'm taking the tongues out of my shoes and I'm stuffing my tongues locally. So on Memorial Day, he's off for the 3-day weekend and I get caught bringing cigarettes in. So they fired me, threw me in the hole. Well, Simon Lease had meetings Tuesday morning, so he wanted me down in his office Monday. So he called up, hey, I need Blyweiss to come down and clean the office. They're like, Blyweiss lost his, you know, his
porter job. What is the hole?
The hole is you're eating military call it MREs. We call it shit piles that's just cooked. It's just nasty, nasty. They call them protein bars.
Okay.
And anybody who's in jail, one of those. Isolation, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I'm in the hole for 2 weeks. He calls up, asks for me, and they say, nope, he lost his privileges. He was caught bringing, and he said to them, what did I just say? I want Blyweiss down here.
Yeah.
So I go down there, pulls me in the office, like, Blyweiss, what are you doing? You got caught bringing cigarettes in? He was like, you know, you can smoke anything you want here. You can do this anytime. What is wrong with you? He was like, calls them up and says, Blyweiss has his detail back. He's never going to happen again. So this guy, Brian Fox, he's getting ready to retire. This dude loved me. He knew I was a fighter, but we didn't tell anybody in jail. They find out you're a boxer in jail, you're going to be fighting everybody because everybody wants to challenge the guy that worked with Mike Tyson. Everybody wants to challenge the guy that worked with Lennox Lewis.
Wow.
Again, this is in the mid-90s, so the internet's not huge. So no one's tracking this stuff. Right. Well, I'm sorry, late 90s. So the big push was after 2000. So this was late 90s. So I do my 6 months. I had it so easy that I get out. Well, by the time I'm in there, I was making big money at boxing. My ex-wife petitioned the court. Father's not in his life. Got full custody. Got arrearages of $375 a week for the time I was gone. So now penalties and fees, which she wasn't making money, they were just, they just added interest and fees.
Yeah.
And that's why it's called Taxachusetts, not Massachusetts.
Right. Jeez.
Well.
Wow.
So they let me out and they forgot to do this thing called NABS. It's a national check to make sure there's no warrants out for you, which I wasn't supposed to get out. I was supposed to do my time and get shipped back to Massachusetts. Oh. Well, I get out, and then 2 hours later, they're hitting me up trying to say, where you at? You need to come back to probation. I'm like, fuck you. That. Catch yeah. if you can. I'm out. Catch yeah. me. So I went on the run for 5 years, and I was on the run for 5 years, went to Florida. I met this guy in jail that his family had this Lowe's scam that they did for years, which they go in and let's just say there was two $500 paint sprayers. They go in and buy one, pay cash, go right out the center doors with the receipt, drive off the lot. At every Lowe's center, there's like a food spot or there's like a coffee place, a Dunkin' Donuts. Meet there, hand me the receipt. My driver would take me to the Lowe's. I go in, get the other paint sprayer, go out Gardner Lumber, which is on the complete opposite sides of the building where she went out. And then I'd say, hey, I just bought this. I almost forgot to get something for my wife. She would have killed me if I didn't get it, but you guys don't have it. Thank you. They see you just bought it. Have a good day, sir. Walk out with the stolen paint sprayer. Go. Now, my Sally's family member worked for their corporate office at that time in North Carolina, was getting us blank receipt paper.
Okay.
So we go to the car, burn a receipt on their rolls of paper. We yeah. just copy the receipt, and then we'd make them in the hotel. So then he'd go back in, get them, say, I just bought this with cash. My husband just flipped out. My wife just flipped out, depending on who was in there. And they would give you your cash back. Now you have a receipt for a good one. You have the product. You go to the next store. You print your receipt on the way to the next store. They go and return that. And then you rewalk the store. We did that for 5 years, all the way from Florida, Panhandle. And the thing is, I talk about this stuff because there's just such a huge, huge craziness to this whole story. So my dad calls me 5 years into doing this. My dad knew what I was doing. I was sending chunks of home my money. So when I did get caught, I knew I owed $38,000 to Ohio.
Yeah.
And God only knows how much Massachusetts was going to take me for. Now it wasn't 6 months I ran from. It's 5 years and 6 months at $375 plus penalties and fees.
Oof. I don't even want to think about that.
Over 185. So I became the number 10 most, or on the number, I was number three, but on the most 10 wanted list in Massachusetts.
Whoa.
So I had marshals looking for me. I had all kinds of law looking for me. Almost got pinned up towards the end. And then I had a friend that was in Tennessee, and I went and hid out down there for about 6 months. And then I get a call from my father saying, hey, you might want to get home. Your mother's dying. And I'm like, okay, good. Yeah. I yeah. do want to get home. I want to see her take her last
breath. You want to see it, right.
So I don't make it. He calls me about 3 hours away. My buddy from Maryland, because I was on the want, my buddy from Maryland, Danny again, you'll hear Danny. Danny calls me. I called Danny. He comes from Maryland to Nashville to pick me up to us drive back to my mother's funeral. And I'm driving on the way home. Like, I didn't care. I didn't care. We get there. I don't make it. 3 hours away, she dies. But in the Jewish tradition, it's an honor for the husband and the kids to throw dirt on the grave once you lower the grave. I told my dad I wanted to be the first one to throw dirt on her grave. I was throwing it on it during the service. I was kicking it. I just was just so glad she was dead. That was in 2004.
Okay.
So 2004, get hemmed up. So I tell my dad, Dad, you know, if I come home, they're going to snag me.
So they're going to get
and,
you.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, that's, you just see that in movies. I'm like, Dad, I'm on the marshals list. They look for this stuff. Wanted. They're alerted. So. Yeah. They didn't get me at the actual funeral, but they got me in what Jewish people do after a funeral. They sit Shiva for 7 days. What Shiva is the grieve over the person. They have to cover their mirrors, cover their windows. So here, everything's covered in my house, and we hear boom, 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 boom. Police, open up. My dad answers the door. The fucking house is surrounded. He's
so you
like,
can't run. There's no
he's
run.
Like, we know Alan's there. Let him, you know, let us in. He's like, no, you're not coming in. This is my wife just buried. He's not here. What do you think he would come home for this? And they're like, well, let us. And he's like, not unless you have a search warrant.
Good so for your dad. Yeah.
So, but they said no problem. They sit there and they wait as they make a phone call and they get their search warrant. That's how it works.
That's how it works, right?
So they get their search warrant. They knock on the door again. And then my dad's, in between this time, my dad's telling me, shoot out the back door. I'll get someone to pick you up down at Martin Road Park and this and that. And I'm like, Dad, the house is surrounded. They don't know what they're picking me. It doesn't say child support on the marshals list. It says most wanted. So I said, Dad, it's time. So he goes screaming and punching, you son of a bitches. I just lost my wife. Now I'm losing my son again. I come out and turn myself in. I go to jail. They have 10 days to, to pick me up, extradite me. So they have 10 days to pick me up. Sure enough, do the state cops from Massachusetts want to hit a Boston Red Sox Orioles game. And they waited to the 10th day, those son of bitches, to the 10th day to pick me up. Here I am. They bring me back. I'm calling my dad. They're letting me use their BlackBerry. I'm making phone calls to everybody, letting them know I got him. I'm going to be away, I thought, for a very long time. And they bring me in. I go through BWI Airport, all orange jumpsuit, shackled to the front with a box. And I'm walking through the airport, and here I'm on the black. People are looking at me, and the cops are like, look, they don't know this is a child support. They probably think you're a murderer.
A crazy murderer or something, yeah.
So, yeah, now I'm starting to give people hard eyes, and I'm having fun with it. And they're loving it. They're, like, tugging on my chains, like, easy.
The cops, yeah, yeah.
So
that's great.
They were really, really cool. They were really cool. So I go to Massachusetts, and the guy, head of probation, comes down, and Dennis says, I told you I'd catch you. I'm like, yeah, my mother's funeral. I spit in his face. He tells me then, you're going to be in jail or on probation till the day I die. Which, 20 years later, I'm still on probation. But that's a whole nother, whole nother story. Well, I go into court. We have to hit it right off the bat, 60 grand. My dad pays about 30 grand for an attorney, 60 grand to keep me out of jail to Massachusetts that wanted me to do 2 years. So I got a suspended sentence of 2 years, which still is over my head. And I had to pay over $165,000 back. So get caught. Through all this time, here comes the story changer. My dad calls me. I get extradited to Ohio after Massachusetts, but I had the 38 stacks my dad already had. This guy I met, he was a lawyer, Barry Levy, a little Jewish lawyer. He knew I was Jewish when I was in jail. Doing the, you know, because I cleaned the courtrooms, the lobby, and I'd always talk
to
him.
Get to know people,
yeah. Yeah, so he took my case for $1,000 when my dad called me. Told him I had all the money, so got shipped back to Ohio. Judge Schlesinger said, Blyweiss, I am so impressed. You've been on the run for over 5 years, and you never got in police contact. That must mean you got your shit together, and you have the money. Have a good day. Walked out of jail. Now, I get home to my dad's. I need to crash. Mom's dead. My dad really was brokenhearted, even though he went through all the abuse, but he didn't know how to deal with trauma. And we stay in there for a little bit. I go back to Massachusetts because I have a floor business now. So I go back to Massachusetts, and my dad calls me and says, hey, Jenny just wrote a letter wanting to know where her dad is. That's my daughter. I only met one time.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And I think Chris is divorced. Well, Chrissy was married. I don't want to go down my own kid's testimony, but they were all abused in different ways, and they went through hell with their father / stepfather. My youngest, Kira, so she called. That's why they wanted to adopt, because they were having their own kid, Kira. I've been raising her since 9 years old. Like, she's my special kid. Like, my daughter, they all have such a special place in my heart.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Get this letter, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. How
changes
what?
Everything, right?
Everything. And I'm just feeling it off now. So I call, my dad says, wait till tomorrow to call. So I'm like, damn, tomorrow, Dad. And he starts laughing. He knew I was calling right then. Right. So I call. I hear this high-pitched voice, hello? And I'm like, Chrissy, it's Alan. And he's like, no, it's Jeremy, your son. I'm like, oh. So I said, buddy, I'd love to talk to you right now. I know Jenny wrote a letter, but I said, I got to talk to your mom first.
Yeah.
So Chrissy, he's like, well, she gets off work at 6. 30 minutes later, I get a call from Chrissy. She's like me. Like,
yeah,
I know I get a call quick.
Right away, yeah.
So she calls, and she says, hey, you know, I know you're really pretty busy there with the police. Why, since we broke up,
you ain't kidding.
And she was like, but you know, the kids want you in their life and I want that for them. You know, I kept you alive to their life. So I'm like, yeah, right. Every girl says that. So I'm to go back and see them. This was like a month before Thanksgiving. So okay. She wanted to wait till after the holidays. I get to start talking to my kids. Well, that made it for about a week. And I call her one day and say, Chris, one thing you remember about me from the past, I said how spontaneous I was. And she's like, oh, yeah, I love that bag. I was like, well, I'm about an hour and a half away.
Yes, let's go. Oh, yeah.
I said, I got a room. I said, yeah, let's do this. And she said, let me talk to the kids. And they were all for it. So I remember to this day, Comfort Inn Hotel down in Hummelstown. Used to be a Kmart up there. It was tucked away in there. They lived in Hummelstown because when I was boxing, we tried Baltimore. And with me being on the road all the time in training camps, I wanted my wife to be close to her family because she has a good, close family. So I come back. I get the hotel. After school, they come to see me. And I get off. I went out. I bought this new Calvin Klein leather jacket. I had, like, you know, nice clothes on, Calvin Klein shoes, you know. And I get off the elevator, and I remember all three of them looking like this. Looking up at me and just like, and I was 308. I was retired. I got fat. I was like 318 pounds. I was just a big dude.
Big dude, yeah, yeah.
And I just hugged them, and then we had the whole family, Chris's whole family, and I was so close to them too. Like they were so
supportive,
so supportive of me when they first met me. They knew I was a bad kid, just didn't know how bad. And we went to Hosses in Hummelstown with the whole family. I remember my brother-in-law, he used to be 9 years old when I left, and I used to, like, box him. I used to put him in football gear, punt a ball up in there, and just smash him. And yeah. Now he comes in, this old kid, like, he's not a kid anymore. Eyes look, I'm like, are you high, dude? Like, what's up? Like, you smoking? He's like, no, I'm a teacher. I'm like, what? Yeah. Not you. Like, this is the kid that would, like, tell people he's going to shove a dinosaur up their ass if they don't shut up.
He's like, a teacher.
Yeah. And now he's teaching. That's so great. So the family, and all they kept talking about is the kids told me they never heard one bad word. They said, your father was an amazing man. He had such a great talent. He was so lovable, such a big heart, but he couldn't keep his dick in his pants, and he got himself into a lot of trouble. So I started this relationship with my kids. Chris and I get to know each other a little more. Then I start letting her know some truth. 6 months later, we get remarried. So here, now this is going back 19 years ago. This last Thanksgiving, I've been back in my kids and wife's life.
That's great, yeah.
Great thing to get awarded to, but I didn't know how to be right yet. I still didn't know how to love, didn't know how to be a father,
yeah.
Didn't know how to be a husband. No affection whatsoever. My idea was screw them and you're gone, you know?
Yeah. Like, because that's how your youth was and teen
absolutely.
Years and everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell kids, I got a body count that I'm not proud of, but it was abuse to women. Like, I had no respect for women. That was my way to degrade them, was just to screw them. And here I get these kids back, and I'm, you know, I first dad come in the house, they've got Dare posters on their wall, and I'm like, get those fucking things off your wall.
I remember that, yeah.
And, Dare, you know, posters, I see the beads, I'm like, fuck this God, like, don't even believe, like, when I die, and I'm just a mean, angry man.
Oh, wow.
Not knowing how to be a father.
Yeah.
So then Shane's mom calls my wife, and at this time, so my father, best thing in his life before he passed was he got to see his grandkids. He got to be part of their lives. We did a lot of fun stuff. He said, basically, let's just close the business. Take all the money you have. I want you to just blow it on your kids for the first year you're back. Vacations we went on, shopping sprees, like, not, you know, not just trying to buy their affection, but just make up for everything
for
I missed.
Yeah.
I felt like I owed him a birthday, you know, a
every
birthday
day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
So I get there. So then my mother-in-law worked with Shane's wife. And she was like, hey, there's this new MMA gym.
That Shane Manning.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
And Joel. Joel started with Shane in their garage.
Shout out to Joel.
And,
he's here in the studio.
Yep, and he comes in this very soon. So I find Five Stones because my mother-in-law worked with Shane's wife. And here's this MMA gym that uses mixed martial arts to share the gospel of Jesus. I'm like, that sounds pretty cool. Like, screw the Jesus part, but being a boxing coach, man, I'd love to do that. I go meet Shane, they had a great little spot over there in Lebanon, and I became their full-time boxing coach. Now, here I had a bunch of MMA kids. This is in 2007 or 2008. Yeah,
2006. Yeah, 2006.
We have a bunch of MMA kids. I found God through Five Stones. Joel was there. We had, like, after we rolled, after we boxed, man, we would just get on the mats and just talk, open our Bibles, just share the gospel, what God's image is of us, what we're supposed to be in God's image.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so going to church, Pastor Nelson, everything was good. Things started getting better. My youngest daughter was at the gym with me all the time. She That's loved great. Going to all the fights. My kids were always there. Like, started learning, okay, this is family.
Mm-hmm.
Was baptized in Lebanon in 2006. But I was baptized, honestly, because I wanted to fit in. Again, I always had that issue of fitting in, i.e. gangs, i.e. trouble, i.e. let someone dare me to do something. So I felt I needed to do this, not for God, but for me to say I'm coaching here to be, be a leader, because I didn't know how to do that either. I start doing good. We're going to church. I can see how much it's helping my wife. Our marriage is getting good and happy, and forgiveness is going on. And then I had major health stuff. So I was shot and stabbed in 2000 in Massachusetts. They called my father, thought I was going to be dead.
Why? What happened? Shot and stabbed?
Yeah. Well, a year prior, exactly four days before it would have been a year. Again, this is pre-Jesus, and this is pre-cell phones and cameras, kids. But I was to sell a Kia Coke, and I got the money from the Mexican guys. I took them to the high-rise in Mattapan, went in there, called 911, said there was a shooting. I pulled the fire alarm so chaos would happen. I went out the back door with the money and the key, and I completely got away. Thought I'd be, they called me on my back then it was like a brick phone. When they're calling me, I'm like, you motherfuckers, you set me up. As soon as I went in there, the cops come rolling in, kicking the door. I'm gonna fucking have you killed. Like, don't ever fucking come near me. And they thought, I beat him. So 4 days to a year, I'm sitting in a bar with my brother and we're drinking, and I'm telling him about this. This is in Mattapan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this kid that I got, his little brother was there and heard me talking to my brother. As you can tell, I have a loud voice. Hear him talk to my brother, tell him all this. 30 minutes later, my brother and I go to get out, and boom, I hear a pop. And then right from behind, I feel just this burn.
Holy shit.
And I got shot right here. It was with a 22. And then I got stabbed with like a survival knife. So get flown to Mass General, one of the biggest trauma hospitals in the world, and was called my dad, said he's probably not going to make it. You might want to come up. I was in surgery for 18 hours, but I made it.
Wow. Yeah, here you are. Here thank I God. Am. Jeez.
And so then I just get my family back now in 2008, just remarried my wife, found God, found a purpose in Five Stones. And I joke around and say it's my sister-in-law's fault, because they wanted me to do this cleanse. I can't say it was a cleanse, but I did this. Ended up with a blockage in my small intestine. So I had to have surgery on this. So I went and had surgery. Well, the surgeon, as he took out the blockage and sewed me up, saw scar tissue from the stab wounds.
Yeah.
And where they had to sew me up and that. So they went to cut all that out and didn't realize they nicked a part of the other part of my small intestine and sewed me back up.
Oh,
next no. morning, I have a fever of 106. I'm septic. I'm puking. My wife calls 911. I get shipped to Hershey Hospital.
This is serious. This yeah. is real serious. Yeah.
Right away, I have C. diff in my lungs. Shit in my lungs.
Holy shit.
We got to put them in surgery. We have to do some into a coma. I have pictures. Any of my social media has all my medical pictures, but sitting there induced coma, numerous surgeries. They did like 9 total surgeries. I lost 2/3 of my small intestine, was like a millimeter or so away from having a bag for the rest of my life, which probably would have caused me suicide in my dark days. And I'm going through massive surgeries and I'm getting pumped morphine. I'm getting pumped oxys, liquid drips of Dilaudid on top of everything. Get through the surgeries, then I have incisional hernias. Go through 4 incisional hernias. I end up at Johns Hopkins because basically they have to redo my whole entire stomach. They have to take cadaver skin, which I have black cadaver skin now, and no, in boxing it didn't make me any faster. So I literally have cadaver skin in me. I was so back together. For 2 months, they had to keep me open because of the infection. They would have to pack and unpack that like 3 times a day. And it was always, God. Oh, Mr. Blyways, put the pillow over your face. It was just sheer torture.
Yeah.
So that went on. I came out of the coma a month early, and I went to ICU, but still needed a lot of care. My wife didn't bring the kids around because they just got me back. They didn't want to see me like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They were young, very young. So get out of the hospital. Now I'm on pills galore. Get through the surgeries. That was about a year, year and a half. Then I have the major neck surgery, the Jacob's ladder. Then I had to have my left elbow's completely replaced. They had to take a little bit of my elbow, my forearm bone out in order for my elbow. They said it would get straight. It never has. Tommy John on this elbow. Numerous little knee surgeries, just all the traumas from boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
Started at 7 years old, right? You know, back then we spar 5 days a week, not, you know, so that's where the brain damage comes in.
Yeah.
So, you know, being diagnosed now with CTE, get what's called a PET scan, get the death sentence of 10 years, you know, before I'm not going to be able to speak, before my gait, before my memory. In writing from Hopkins, all these other mental health, you know, PTSD. It's fun. I literally, I'll share it with you too. I call it my get out of jail free card, but with the type of CTE I have, it causes bad behavior, it causes sudden bursts of rage, you know, but I carry this card and it's also got the attorney firm that says what it is and see you later, I get out.
You're out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't ever want to use that. I used to be proud knowing I carried it. So I went through all these surgeries, continued on a diet. Now I'm not just on pain pills. They have me on benzos because now I'm having panic attacks. With the brain damage, you know, things got bad. In the hospital, that's when COVID came out. Literally got a shot without signing papers because if you were in the hospital, they could.
Oh, they forced it on you.
They forced it on you. So I get a shot. 2 years later, now I'm sitting home writing poems, dark, I'm dying, like nothing I can do about it, fighting suicidal thoughts, rages. Here I just get my family back, doing great. Right. Now I'm a monster again. My kids are scared of me. I've said some mean things to these kids. You know, I became out of control mean. And I kept going. Joel, every once in a while, would just reach out for me. Hey, how you doing? How you feeling? You know, like, send me a message. Just check on me.
Yeah.
Well, I get going, and, you know, after the surgeries, all this stuff, it'll be 3 years this July since Joel baptized me, but 3 years ago, I get a call from Joel, and he says, hey, we just got a new spot in Anvil. We're getting it ready. You know, you should come check it out. You know, now at this time, I have no license. I'm fighting all this mental health stuff.
Got a lot going on.
Taking pills, snorting them, just handling it completely horribly. Kids not wanting to be around me. And I went to Firestones in Anvil and, you know, I took Joel up on his offer, and I walk in, and I literally hear as a voice as I'm speaking to you saying, you're home. And I was like, hey, what's up, Joel? And there wasn't a Joel. So if you've ever been in a gym, it's a big gym. You walk around, then there's an office glassed in. Well, Shane and Joel are in there talking. Doors closed.
Whoa, but you heard a voice.
I'm just like, all right, I've heard voices before, though. You know, Austin, right, yeah. I've heard voices, I believe but it. Yeah. Never something just like your home.
Yeah.
So I go in, Joel and Shane were just catching up on stuff. And, you know, I didn't tell them any of, you know, what I was battling. They knew the hell stuff, but not the pain pills and all that stuff.
How deep it goes, yeah.
And they were like, man, you know, you want to just come hang out, do this, you know, come back and coach, help out. I'm like, you know, just go home. So I went home and I heard that same voice again when I was just thinking about it, like, you're home. I was like, holy shit. Like, this ain't the voices I used to hear. And I put two and two together. I'm like, we talk about things of Five Stones, identity, purpose, calling, training, and staying on mission. I had no identity since birth. I had, you know, no training other than athletic training, being a great athlete. No purpose. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go back and try this out. I think maybe this is God telling me this is what my purpose is.
It's a sign, right? Yeah, yeah, for
sure. Went back there. Go in the first day of boxing. There's a little kid there, a little Christian kid, Andrew. Man, I see this kid box. I'm like, whoa, this kid's got a God-gifted ability.
Yeah.
And this kid's only, at that time, he's only 11 years old. And I'm watching this kid. I'm like, all right. So I started messing around with the boxers and stuff like that. Then I knew that was God. I knew my calling. So right then and there, I quit. Porn I was using, which my wife was cool with it. Like, I could have sex in a day and still use porn four times a day. Addiction, everything that we talk about, like, I wanted to do this. So I'm like, if I'm going to do it this time, I'm not going to do the Christian thing just to say it. I'm going to change my ways.
You're going to be dead serious about it. Like, let's do it.
So I go back there, and Joel can tell you, Shane can tell you, when I first came back, my speech was slurred all the time. I was going into AFib numerous times. I'd work a couple days at Five Stones. I'd be in the hospital for 2 weeks with heart issues. Then I'd go again. I go to Five Stones. Boom. I fall back on the turf. We have a huge 400-pound tire with a rim in it. I bang my head off the turf. I break my neck. Go to Hershey because I get up, but I didn't want to tell anybody. I had no feeling in my right three fingers. Oh. So I go to the hospital. They're going to have to do surgery. They did a CAT scan. They're going to do an MRI in the morning to check it out, and then I'm right into surgery. So they went to do the MRI, and they're like, hold on, let's try another image. There was no break. It was completely healed. So that's when I said, you know what? I want to dedicate my life to Jesus. I talked to Joel because Joel had led me back. You know, God had led me back through Joel, but Joel was that one that just never let go of me. Go back there. Know this is real now because I've tried everything, psychologists, psychiatrists, the gangs, the street, the criminal activity, everything, nothing. I said I had that emptiness earlier.
Right.
Nothing ever filled that emptiness. So we got baptized in July 3 years ago. It'll be 3 years. And when I say I came out of that water and I just felt this demonic presence just literally lift off me. And when I took that breath of air, not only in a week's time, as you can hear, my speech has been immaculate.
Yeah, real good.
My heart monitor has only been used 7% of the time, which is the number of God. Wow. Where when they put it in, it was being used 66% of the time, which is the number of the devil.
Yeah.
All this is in medical papers. I got it in black and white.
Yeah, yeah. Proof, right, evidence, yeah.
My Parkinson med, I'm down to just taking 2 pills a day instead of 4. My memory still a little shoddy here and there, but short term, my energy level, everything. So not just that. So here's not only since I do this and but really go and change my life, the porn, what I watch on TV, the music I was listening to, culture.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. When someone's going through the things I've had and feel this and really see what it does, there's no other way. And now My family's all getting back together. My wife comes to church with me. My daughter comes to church with me. Her husband comes. My youngest daughter goes to church. And if she doesn't go to church, she's watching on her TV.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And my son works for our, you know, for our church. We have an amazing family. All my kids are successful. I just had my first grandson 8 months ago.
Oh, congrats.
Generational curses. And if you're a believer or not, just look up generational curses. Uh-huh. It's real.
Yeah.
Those generational curses that myself went through, my kids went through, have been broken. There's no trauma in their life. They've all been able to deal with it. They've seen how their dad has dealt with it through God.
Yeah.
I finally get, I'm proud of you, Dad, all the time. My kids want to be around me all the time. My wife loves the man that she knew I could be. I've learned how now to be a father. I know how to love. I know how to lead a family. I know how to bring up other kids, other people that have gone through anything of addiction, abandonment.
Because you've been there.
Abuse. Been absolutely.
There, yeah. You can relate to them, yeah.
So now it's, God has a bigger purpose than Five Stones. God has a purpose for me to get out there, and I really want to work with Christian young athletes or just athletes that are on the fence. We talk about a Five Stones to 18 to 35-year-old male because it's a mixed martial arts thing. That's the ratings that they watch.
Yeah.
Jesus doesn't watch MMA. I'm here to reach anybody. If I can't reach them before 18, it's going to make our work harder from 18 to 35. If I can reach them in that pubescent age to that 18-year-old male,
yeah,
it's going to change generations.
Yeah, change your life forever.
Yeah, yeah, and I do that. I've got kids. I don't care that they ever lifted their hand and got a trophy in boxing, but I got kids that'll tell you because of me and what God's done in my life, they've gone to the military. I've got a 44-year-old male that came to church. Joel knows him very closely. I won't use his name, but didn't know what he wanted to do in life. I end up becoming best friends with the sheriff of Dauphin County, Nick Clemente.
Yeah.
All the people over there love me. And we were asked to do prison ministry there. So there's that 18 to 35-year-old male, yes, but I'm here to save anybody that's had any kind of trauma in their life or has any kind of doubt about what God really can do in someone's life, including your family. And that's the stage I'm on now. And it's funny. I just had lunch with Kyle Snyder. Kyle Snyder is a 4-time national wrestler at Ohio State.
Oh, wow.
2-time Olympic medalist going to the Paris Olympics, went to pick gold. And that's what I said. Phew. And then I look up, I don't know who this guy is. I look up this guy. He's a superstar of an athlete. He's hundreds of, like millions of followers, but he's a Christian. He's humble. And this kid wanted to meet me. He didn't care. He heard my testimony on that podcast without the camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just wanted, he had to meet me. So it wasn't starstruck. It was the story. Because this young man had it right. He had a good love of family. He had a Christian upbringing. He continues to walk, but yet he uses that platform to share the gospel.
Yeah.
Just like that NFL kicker. Like, you know, NFL kicker that talks about what a man should be and what God wants a man to be. Uh-huh. And now, you know, Kelsey's talking about not playing. Shit on fucking Kelsey. I'd like to do it's a ridiculous charity boxing sparring match with him. I'll knock him out still.
I believe it, yeah.
But
yeah.
But to hear that.
You stand just, with your teammates, yeah, you know.
You know what I mean? But then the coach, I love Andy Reid, which I'm a fan of him as a coach. But to step up and say, you get rid of the kicker, you're getting rid of me.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge.
Yeah.
But
it's brotherhood, really, you know.
And that's, listen. And that's all Christianity is. Everybody thinks it's going around thumping you with the Bible. No. Yeah. If you just stick to what Scripture is, it's a simple message. God just wants you to live in a clean image, an image of what God is. That He gave His only Son to give us His image. So it's not hard. It's a relationship. But it's an amazing relationship to have because now I tell people, with Christ, dreams do come true. They do. And I'm working with some very strong Christian young athletes. One of them, this young kid, you know, Lincoln, he's up in Penn State. This kid's a gymnast at 15 years old, and he's got can't miss written all over his chest.
Yeah.
But he also has to hear about how God has given you this blessing what you need to do back. It's not just you go to gym practice and when you practice with your team, you do your training with your team. No. What are you going to do better? How are you going to sharpen your iron?
Yeah.
You know, you got to be doing more than the other guy that's doing what you're doing. You know, so, you know, it's, I want to teach these young men and young women that your dreams can come true. And I want to save them way before it takes, you know, I'm 55 now, way before 52 years old, you know, and that's really where my platform stands now, you know, with Five Stones. And, you know, so it's just been an amazing journey. I didn't think I was ever worth this, but... But the rewards that the Lord's been giving me, I beg to differ.
Everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely. You know? So, and it is. It's to just get out here and share my testimony so I can put it out and have so many people just listen to it. And, you know, I'm probably, this is probably going to be my last podcast because, you know, I did a good one with this guy, Coach Jay, for Jesus. This has been a great time with you. That's it. Now I can just say, hey, you want to hear my full testimony? Boom, just go right there. I don't have to go to the
American Grown podcast or whatever. Because
sometimes people listen to this stuff and they're all about, oh, you sparred with Tyson, you sparred with Lewis, you sparred with Bo, but they're missing the point.
It's the message.
I screwed that up. Yeah. I should have been the heavyweight champion of the world.
Right.
I had it.
You did.
I had it. You know what? But if you don't get yourself right, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. So... That's pretty much my story.
Alan, man. I mean, holy cow. Let's take a sip break if that's all right. Absolutely. Let's take a sip break. Thank you for sharing this, man. Holy cow. I mean,
I could have went down so many different rabbit holes off the little stories too, but we'll get to know each other, man.
Yeah, yeah, we'll talk more. I mean, so I got a couple more questions, sure. Then we kind of wrap this up because I know we want to.
Yeah.
All right, we're still pretty good on time. All right. Let me just take a breath. Like, wow. You know, your life is from the gangs to the Bloods to the abuse you went through to, you know, sparring with some of the best, Mike Tyson, you know, Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis, like some of the best. And, but yet, you know, you blew all that, but yet here you come back around, you get your family back, you know, you find Five Stones with Joel. You know, you get baptized, which maybe Joel held you under a little bit longer, you know, to get...
You know, he did, actually. Did he? Yeah, he did. It was like a 7-second baptism.
Okay, he knew. But now here you are. It's like, man, you can't write a better script in Hollywood than what, like, your life has been.
Yeah.
You know? So, all right, let's knock some questions out. Sure.
It's funny, too, you say, I checked you out and stuff, and Mitch Davis, like... I remember when Mitch Davis was just training, like, you know, his parents, Pennsylvania Counseling, and he used to train with us. That he was such a good kid, and it's funny, like, none of these kids knew other than the good things that happened in my testimony. Like I said, I went for so many years not letting anybody behind this wall.
Yeah.
So, but it's all forgiveness.
Yeah.
Like, I can honestly say, my mother, anybody that's ever abused me, hurt me, I forgave them. How can I hold that? Yeah. I hold that, it holds me down. So
it only hurts you, right?
Absolutely.
100%. So,
and that's something. If you can just learn to forgive, man, you can get through traumas.
Really, and Mitch is a great guy.
Oh, Mitch is awesome.
Great strength coach.
I've heard he's done really well.
Yeah, he was awesome getting to meet him the first time, like you and I are meeting. And, gosh, I feel like I knew him forever. And it's like I consider him a friend for sure. You know?
Yeah, he's a good kid.
So let's touch on real quick, like the boxing career. You know, what was that like? Getting to fight with Mike Tyson, you know, what was that like for you, getting to spar with him?
I mean, I was scared to death going in, but, I mean, I've been working with big heavyweights and heavy hitters. Like, I mean, Riddick Bowe could rock your whole body, and I was with him in his prime. I always told people Mike was a monster more than what the news caught back then, because the news was way different back then. But, you know, he went away for, you know, the one rape of that, you know, contestant, but... He did a lot of bad things on the road, but he also went through so much trauma as a kid. You know, his father was a pimp. His father, you know, was a dope dealer. His mother was a hooker. He'd go home and get beatings by the Johns. He was molested by a John. So, I mean, this is bits and pieces. If you dig deep, you can find on him. But he, you know, I was that same monster. So I can't really judge him like that. He, you know... I hope he's at peace. He's in my prayers. I wasn't ever like, you know, his lead sparring partner. Was just, we had the same coach at the time. Mm-hmm. And anytime I was up there, I got some rounds with him. So I tell people it was his speed and the angles. Okay. He was a short heavyweight. So the way he could turn his body and bring those angles, if you watch his tapes, the hooks, and then he's able to bring an uppercut off that hook, nobody was doing that. So your biggest knockout punches in boxing are your uppercuts and your hooks. Everybody can take a shot to their head as hard as they want here.
Yeah.
But it's when you get the, you know, your bell rung from the side or up like
under
that.
Under the chin, yeah.
Yeah, those are the flash knockouts and the knockout punches. So, you know, now with the CTE and that stuff, I just realize how many times my head was like that. How many times I was driving home from the gym and I don't remember getting home.
Wow.
Or wow. Even getting lost for a small period of time. So getting sick. So I know I was probably taking the trauma from a young age because I wasn't a slick boxer. You know, they called me the Rock because I literally would just walk through your punches so I could hit you.
Yeah. And what was your build back then? Like you're fairly tall, 6'4".
I'm 6'2".
6'2", okay.
But 6'2", 225 was the biggest I ever got.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a very big heavyweight, you know. Right. Haseem Rockman, I worked with him. He was a big heavyweight. Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, Jimmy Thunder, Kevin McBride. I was Kevin McBride. That was my last sparring camp in Boston when he fought Mike Tyson.
Wow.
I went in as his sparring partner, and that's when my ex-wife told me I needed to quit boxing stuff. So,
that's enough.
You know, so... Wow. Mike was a funny guy. You know, he took his pigeons everywhere he went. That's a very true fact.
Yeah.
But I just pray for him. I pray for him because he could have peace.
Well, I got to ask you, since it's coming up, what do you think of Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul? What do you think of that fight? What do you think it says about boxing where it's at now?
Yeah.
Like, what are your thoughts on that?
If you want to see how the fight's going to turn out, watch Mike Tyson, Peter McNeely. Because that is exactly how it's going to find. The first punch he hits him with, he's going to knock Jake Paul halfway across the ring.
Yeah.
Then when he catches him with the first combination, he'll knock him out. Last thing you go, they call it old man strength for a reason. You don't lose your power in boxing. And he's still strong. He's been hit by the biggest of heavyweights. Jake Paul is going to be put to sleep.
In over his head for sure.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt.
So money, the safe bet would be put money on Mike Tyson. I'm not a big bettor.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you really are a huge gambler and you want to make a donation to Five Stones, bet a knockout within the first 2 minutes. So just make sure you send your 20% to Five Stones Fight Club.
I like
donation.
I think Shane would like that too.
But no, the boxing's changed so much. Like, if you look at the history of boxing, the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s was the heavyweight mecca of boxing. You know, since Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman the first time. And it continued. Then you got even better athletes in the heavyweight. So it was a blessing in some ways, thinking financial. You know, the money I made, but then it wasn't a blessing in other ways with taking that kind of poundage to my body and to my brain so much for all those years and even making millions, not having a penny to, you know, to show for it.
Yeah.
Just because of my careless life.
Right. You know, you mentioned CTE, and for the listeners, I had to look it up. It's chronic, traumatic, I'm going to butcher this, but encephalopathy.
Yes, you say it better than me. Okay. Like people, I just say look it up. It's easier. CTE.
CTE, right. So to kind of explain what that is, it's a progressive and fatal brain disease that's linked to repeated head injuries and blows to the head, you know, often seen in football players, boxing, military veterans, first responders that have a history of repetitive, head trauma. So, you know, you're living with CTE. Interesting enough, and I'll kind of segue into this, there's an athlete here from Lebanon County, born and raised, Jared Odrick, which you might have, everyone's kind of familiar from the area, graduated from Lebanon High just up the road. He played football for Penn State, and then he was selected by the Miami Dolphins. Yeah, that's right, the first round of 2010 of the NFL draft, and then played for the Jaguars. But he had a YouTube document series called Am I Crazy? And it's all about CTE.
Yeah.
Because he's on a journey to see if he has it, you know, to find out if he's living it with it. So you know, it's just, I've heard about that through CTE, through his YouTube shorts. And then when you mentioned it, I was like, I never even heard about it up until maybe about last year, I think it was.
Well, it's still such a cover-up in the NFL, even though they said they're putting this attention on it. I know numerous NFL athletes and some black athletes that weren't the big names that are suffering from it, but that lawsuit and that settlement doesn't reach those players. It reaches your big-name players, your number one draft picks. But if you also look at the study, like I go to Dr. Cantu and Dr. McGee, I carry a car. My brain, as soon as I die, will go right to Boston University so they can confirm the CTE, and they do studies to help CTE. Well, Dr. Ann McGee was the one, the pathologist that was in the movie Concussion with Will Smith. Dr. Cantu is one of the world-renowned brain surgeon that deals with CTE. Mickey Ward, a good friend of mine, he and I both share the same doctor. Well, he, with that said, here in the NFL, they're saying they're helping, but the study that showed that went to Boston University out of 100 retired NFL players, all 100 had CTE. It's wow. Getting more prevalent in the military now. You hear that wong wong or see those flashes in your eyes, you don't have to puke afterwards. You don't have to be groggy. That's a concussion. Our brains are surrounded by fluid, you know, mm-hmm. So it's a concussion. Your brain is not to get rocked around in your skull.
Yeah.
So it does. It's like a fruit. It just gets damaged, you know, over time.
Yeah.
It gets bruised. And that's basically what CTE is. And then what it does is, so I was a southpaw. Mine is frontal left lobe. And it basically controls everything on that side of your function. My heart, my gait. You know, the speech, it'll sound like I'll have marbles in my mouth sometimes. But again, that's all. I can just thank God I haven't had any episodes. Like my wife had to work from home. She's a nurse, but she works from home because I had to have care around 24/7. I'd wander off. I've been known to have the police in my neighborhood for chasing people down, you know. I've just had such a big battle with it, and to have it gone again and to hear doctors say, like, you know, my last cognitive test, I'm usually so low. It was probably one of my best scores ever. And
that's phenomenal.
You know, and here they told me when I was diagnosed in 2007, I had 10 years to live and things were going to get bad, and things were. Yeah. But they were all, I think, drug-induced, pharmaceutical. Like, it really, it made things speed up.
Big pharma,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, just changing everything and is really turned around my health.
Has there been any, like, maybe it's one person in particular. I know you mentioned Danny a lot, your friend. But has there been, like, a mentor in your life that you would, you know, shout out or credit?
Vardell McCann definitely was, but more than anybody, Mr. Blyweiss, my father, took it on the chin for 30 years with me, loved me unconditionally, always was there to support me. At every 112 fights, most of them were at Hillcrest Heights. We had a gymnasium. For it's in history, had more amateur boxing events than any other gym ever. Right there in our gym, it would, you know, break out the bleachers.
Yeah.
Never, ever had a problem looking for my dad. When I came out to fight,
every time he's there,
he's the only white guy in the crowd. It was like
he stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, he stood out like a sore thumb. So, yeah. But it was cool because I always knew he was there.
He's your rock.
And he's the one that gave me the name The Rock, because he's like, kid, you're not the greatest of boxer, but damn, you're tough.
Yeah.
You know, so my father was definitely, you know, and it's funny because I believe he knew Jesus as well.
Yeah.
But he grew up in such that my grandfather was a hard Russian Jew, you know, but my father always talked about tradition. He'd always laugh, you know, like drinking the Messiah on Passover. The Messiah is supposed to come and drink the wine. He's drinking it and he's winking at me. But he realized it was all tradition and upbringing. But he saw me come back to Five Stones, knew I became a Christian, and still love me. So,
wow, yeah.
And the way my dad lived, he lived, as I said, God's looking for us to live. I don't think he could ever say anything about Jesus because he would have been shunned. He absolutely, knowing my family on the Blackway side, they would have absolutely shunned him.
Wow. Let's talk about the items you brought with you.
Talking about that Russian grandfather, how much idolized and how we idolize being awarded. We didn't get a congratulations when we had a kid. We had a trophy.
Okay.
And this here is the trophy for my son. When he was born, he was a month early. He was like four. I forget what to see. You probably see better than I can.
Yeah. What was he here? Let's see. Hold on. Length, 17. Yeah, 4 pounds.
Yep. 1992. Wow. January 5th, 1992. So I got this trophy. When I came back in my kid's life, my son still had this.
He still had that?
Still had this. And he's the one that gave it to me. My grandfather had the other one. So when my grandfather died, Jeremy took two things. He took this of my his grandfather's, and he took his chai off his neck when he died, and he still wears that to every day. So that there was number one. This stuff was a quick grab. There's so many other things, but just valuable wise, this is when I found five stones the first time. Okay. And saw there could be change in my life. We had six, I think, Joel, MMA guys, never boxed in their life. They were MMA fighters, wrestlers, jiu-jitsu. I took a six group guys in 3 months to the Pennsylvania Golden Gloves. And we had two or three out of the six won the Pennsylvania Golden Gloves for our first time ever.
And they were MMA guys.
These guys were MMA guys. And they just beat boxers. But it was how hard we drilled them. They trained so
dedication,
hard.
Yeah.
Their determination, their beliefs, their conditioning was way better than anybody else's. So we always, and they were just tough kids. So that was really huge to me, just for them. And it was, you know, like I said, we got funny moments with some of the MMA stories that we have with Joel. After, if you got a minute, after my stomach surgery, if I pass gas, it would fucking clear a building.
Oh, damn. It was horrible. Don't do it now.
No, I had rotten ass for years.
Yeah.
So we just met Dan Severin.
Okay.
He was the big MMA guy. He was like the name of MMA back in the day. They're having a big MMA in the Lancaster Convention Center. So they had all the ring girls there, or all the cage girls there.
Oh, no.
And they're all dressed up, and they're sitting there, and they're clapping. I'm like, hey, guys, watch this. I'm going to go crop dust these girls. They're like, no. I'm like, yeah. So I go walk by them, and I crop dust them. And this is, again, to get a laugh. And I crop dust them, and the girls are sitting here clapping like this, and all of a sudden, right. Like, and they all point at me, and they just, they're all up there laughing, just dying. And I'm like,
told you.
Yeah. And I walked back and did the same thing. Get up there, and they're doing it again. Yeah. They're pointing up to the bleachers now. So, you know, so just realizing I could laugh. Like, I never laughed, never had fun. Like, it was
you gotta have fun.
And then the last thing that means more than anything is right here, the Bible. 3 years ago, being baptized, getting in the Word, praying, and living how God wants me. So out of all the important things I've ever done, after the millions I've had go through my hands, after the best drugs I've had, after the countless women, after anything I ever wanted.
Yeah.
That's changed my life more than anything. That showed me who I am, gave me an identity, gave me a purpose, gave me a calling. Now it's my job to stay trained and stay on mission. And that's the one philosophy I'll say with Five Stones that every young man and young woman needs today, because culture has taken everything away from even good family values. Like, I love the fact this is American podcast.
Yeah.
Like, you know, look what just happened to Trump. You know, America is in a very dangerous spot right now.
Dark time. It is.
It really is. And, you know, it's not going to be a win-win situation for anybody. And I'm just seeing the writing on the walls, and I'm seeing what I'm reading from this book that's been written thousands of years ago, and it's all coming true.
Yeah.
That's one book that hasn't lied to me. Everything else I've ever tried to learn has been a lie. You know, so it's Those are the three things. If I could have brought my whole family in, that would have replaced the trophy and my family would have sat right there.
You go.
But they're a little too big right now.
Yeah, I need more chairs.
Yeah, they're a little too big right now. But it's awesome. My youngest daughter is a nurse educator, 29 years old, is sitting there running the OR for major hospital, UPMC. My oldest daughter that wrote the letter, she is a big wig in the military, but she's been in recruiting. She runs MEPS now. She's a lifer. Her husband is, well, that's where they met with my grandson. My son, I love my son to death. He and I are so different. He doesn't play sports. He's not an athlete. He likes to eat. He's short and heavy, but I love that kid to death. He went through a lot of beatings because of him not being his real, my kids heard basically the same thing I heard. That took beatings because they weren't their real kid. So I'm proud of my son. My son, like I said, he does all the accounts and accounting for Five Stones. He's a genius. He's a musician. He's an opera singer.
Whoa!
I mean, these are things like, oh my gosh, my kid's an opera singer. But you know what? My kid's happy.
Yeah.
He's married. We've gone through a lot together. Each and every one of my kids, I've gone through some really ups and down times, but they've all forgiven me, and we are just an amazing family now. We have a lot of fun, you know, and it's just the best reward that I've ever been rewarded with.
Yeah, and just so you know, Alan, the mic's always open. You got friends, family want to come on and share their story because, you know, the American Grown Podcast is all about everyone has a story, right? Joel has a story, Shane, everybody, you know, some stories are more in depth, tearjerker, some are, you have a happy ending, you know what I mean? Like you have a happy ending here, you know, when we started, I wasn't too sure where this was going to go. That's the first time we met you. But like, I always say, if you know anybody, it's always open. You know, I went with American Grown because I am proud of where we're from, you know, this America. And I believe in traditional values, you know, I try not to get too political, but what you see going on in the world, you almost can't help but talk a little bit about it because it's affecting everybody, you know. I always say, just look at the price of gas, eggs, and your groceries, man. If they're going through the roof, something's not right, you know what I mean? Yeah, but you know. But yeah, the mic's always open, so you know anybody,
absolutely,
they're welcome here to share their story. Before we close out, how can our listeners connect with you and follow along on your journey?
I'm on social media, not that much. I'm an old school guy. If I like you, I'll give you my phone number. Honestly, Instagram is just my name, A. Bly Weiss. Facebook's Alan Bly Weiss. So they can follow me on that. And that would be fine.
Perfect. Yeah, and I'll put a link to Five Stones Fight Club. That way they can check it out there because I'm sure you're on there. There's some videos and stuff. And
yeah,
being the boxing coach, so I'll put that in the show notes. Last question before we close out. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
Just, I appreciate you opening the mic, and I hope if anybody out there is listening that any part of my testimony has touched your heart in any kind of way, like, contact me through Five Stones. I'd love to talk to you, like, to pray with you. Don't be scared. Like, it's, you know, it's not going to break out rattlesnakes and, you know, do anything like that. But, you know, I feel a calling just to help anybody, you know, doesn't matter who they are. It's everybody has some kind of past, some kind of trauma, some kind of something that may have affected them in life. And especially now the younger generation, this culture stuff and what they're seeing and thinking things are acceptable. It's just tough, but I also blame some of the parents out there as well. So,
yeah,
you know,
it's wild,
it's
wild
very
times.
Tough. It really is.
Yeah. Alan Blywise, retired professional boxer and boxing coach at Five Stones Fight Club on the American Girl Podcast and the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Awesome, brother. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.